It's another edition of the Talking Mets Podcast here on this Sunday, July the 19th, 2026. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on X at Talking Mets, no G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. Come join me at TheTalkingMetsPodcast.com. Chat for free, premium content, updates on the show, all at TheTalkingMetsPodcast.com. And I want to thank the good folks from the Believe Network for supporting this show. Happy Sunday, everybody. Back from the break. Hope everybody's doing well. We are back at it after a few days off, and buckle up, guys. It's going to be a rough, rough few weeks leading up to the deadline. Your head's going to spin, not only interacting with your friends and those strangers on social media, the actual mainstream media and those who think they're the mainstream media, the rumors will come fast and furious, and there'll probably be a little bit of trolling of the Mets in between, and thoughts from various individuals how to gift certain players to their favorite team, notably the team across town. You'll survive. Don't worry about it. Coming up in just a little bit, big show, our buddy, contributor. It's been a while. He does a great job ranking the Mets farm system for the official Talking Mets podcast ranking. David Mills, he'll join me after the break. We'll have a chat with him. Of course, we'll talk about the midseason. Usually this is the time of the year where he starts to prepare his midseason rankings, and the Mets farm system took a huge hit from the national publications falling into the mid-20s, and a lot of that has been due to the promotions we've seen over the last 12 months. Is the Mets farm system in bad, is it in bad shape? Obviously, the Mets just had a draft. Who the hell knows what to expect out of anything that they produced, just a couple of weeks ago. And, what's coming up? What is coming up with Dave? And I know that one of the things we were talking about offline is the renaissance of the Red Sox, 13-game winning streak. How can the Red Sox, who were mired in the same misery as the Mets just a couple of weeks ago, and similarly had a roster turnover, a big coaching staff and managerial roster turnover, how can they be in this position the Mets not? You know, as the managerial situation, a big part of it. The Phillies have seen success since they changed the manager. So we'll talk a little bit about that. I'm sure we'll get into a bunch of other stuff. And then, of course, your thoughts, the mailbag, as we always do on the way out. We'll have some fun. And throughout the summer, as we head to the back half and what really is extended spring training, and then maybe in September, extended garbage time, we're going to try to get some of those who have volunteered to perhaps join me either on a mailbag or some back and forth segment, fan segment, whether they be, a social media influencer, member of some popular site, or just a Talking Mets contributor, someone who listens to the show, or in the case of Dave Mills, contributes in a bigger way. We'll continue to try to do that throughout the summer as we try to prep and plan for what will be in 2027, depending on, how the collective bargaining pans out. But, we'll start there. And I think it's important because there's so much stuff flying around when it comes to discussing the Mets' plans at the deadline. And a lot of the stuff that goes out there that's a little misleading, and I'm not even calling it educated speculation, it's essentially either an agent or an executive of the other team that has privy to some knowledge about what the Mets conversation with his team was all about, and starts to throw out there information that, hey, the Mets are going to do this. Now, it's from a rival organization. Just because you're having a conversation with another team doesn't mean you're going to reveal everything. That conversation could be a snapshot in time. So you can't get too carried away with it. You have to really work hard as a fan, and it's hard. And it's not just who produces the news. I mean, there's reputable sources, Heyman and Sherman. I mean, then there's the ones that are much more loose, and that's Bob Nightingale. I know Bill Madden's out there. I mean, everybody seems to pop up this time of the year, whether they're entrenched in the core of mainstream media or on the backside of their career, like someone like Madden. They all throw things out there. They all do. And, right now, here's what we do know, because there's a couple of reputable sources, not because I like what they're saying, because historically they don't get themselves in the fray without having real information, and they're a little bit closer to the team. They're not two or three steps away. First, Will Salmon specifically outlined that they weren't looking to blow this thing up. The Mets are typically looking to trade players that are at the end of their contract, like an A.J. Minter, a Tyrone Taylor, guys like that. And anybody who has team control, like a Luke Weaver, it's going to cost you a little bit. Now, as far as something bigger, and I know the questions come with Lindor, and Lindor, who's had an awful year health-wise, he continues to show massive decline on the defensive side, and none of it looks like it's physical. It's all mental. It's like his head's just not in the game, and maybe the situation, what's going on here, the conversation around him, maybe he's trying too hard. I don't know. I mean, I can't get in the guy's head, but you know, today was a bust out. You know, Lindor today looked like the Lindor, the near MVP, the guy that nearly led the Mets to World Series just 24 months ago. It wasn't that long ago. And any other speculation about why he's had these mental lapses, which go back to last year, which really looked like the mind is moving faster than the body. And that's something that's strange. Like, why is that the case? We don't know. That doesn't look like a player declining. And he reminded you today about, hey, all these ideas that the Mets need to dump him to get him out of the clubhouse, to get him away from Soto, or to pay down the contract to get him out of here, or treat him like he's Scherzer or Verlander 2 years ago, who were clearly at the end of their careers. The Mets were trying to grab every last bit of juice out of those two guys while they figured out their pitching staff. That's not Francisco Lindor. That's really not. So Salmon is out there giving you what the blueprint is. And the Mets might even, to some reports, acquire a controlled player to kind of build this because they want to compete in 2027. And why not? Yeah, I get the Dodgers and the Brewers seem to be this new small market, bigger, better version of the Tampa Bay Rays, the National League, juggernaut, so to speak. But this is a tournament sport. It's a sport with a lot of parity. It's a sport with three wild cards. It's not, I mean, you could even argue you shouldn't even use the NBA as a comparison, but the NBA has even become more of a parity league, and that's a lot to do with a salary cap, and I know that that's what the MLB owners are going to try to pitch, but I think the nature of baseball, the randomness of baseball, the randomness, particularly when you get the multiple wild cards and you play this, basically this three-game series, it's so random about how you could get into the division series and be one of the final eight teams in the sport. It doesn't take a lot. I saw on social media earlier today, someone compared, and I apologize for not using your name. It was on my X feed, but someone compared this Mets team to how just a year ago, the Braves were in the doldrums. I mean, yeah, they played spoiler to the Mets late in the year, but I mean, how awful was their pitching because of injuries? And even their offense didn't look great, and they looked like a lost team, a team that was dead in the water and was on the other side of the hill. Now, I don't think they're as good as their start indicated, and they've come back down to earth, but they're a solid team, and I think the Mets are not that far away. And I'll tell you what you saw this weekend, and particularly with McClain, with Scott, the dominance that they showed you out there. I know the Phillies don't have a deep lineup, but they're still the Phillies. It's still Citizens Bank Park. I thought McClain battling through the sixth, particularly, he just missed getting Schwarber, but then he got Harper in that sixth inning was huge. Christian Scott not going as deep as McClain, but he's getting there, and he's dominant in his 5-6 innings. If you could get these guys going 6-7 instead of 5-6, and with the way they pitched this weekend on the road, well, you know, you got something there. And when you start to look at the rumor mill, I mean, even Jim Duquette, there's a guy, reputable, saying, hey, the Mets are not going to be taking on salary to dump a Lindor or to be dumping high-priced veterans just to get them out of here. It's clear they want to continue to build to win now, and maybe there are things coming from this farm system that we just got to be a little bit more patient about. I mean, think about this, and what you saw this weekend, what you're going to see in Milwaukee with Zach Thornton starting against one of the best teams in baseball, huge test on the road, contact pitcher, a team that knows how to be plucky. We saw how they drove the Mets nuts last summer, late in the year when the Mets went in there and got swept, and the Brewers came back each and every way, every game. It was like a vampire, you couldn't kill them. You know, if you could get Zach Thornton to be more of a number three than a number five, because the profile swings a little bit there. If you could get him to be that, now you got three young pitchers. In the matter of 12 months, since last August. Now, I know Scott came up in 24 during the OMG summer, but it was short and he got hurt. He was up for maybe, what, 2 months, and he was just learning. You know, having those three in 12 months coming from the farm system developed and then showing growth and maturity at the big league level, I mean, that to me is huge. And what was interesting listening to Ron Darling today talk about how he felt it took him about 75 starts, which took him into his third season, the end of his third season, and he really didn't feel himself until about 1986, which was his bust-out year. At that point, it was his, you know, best year, and it's probably, from a statistical standpoint, his best year overall, bar none. Maybe not win-wise, but overall in terms of the advanced metrics. To hear a guy who made nearly 400 big-league starts talk about how it took him 70 to 75 starts to really feel himself. Now, that's Ron. That's Ron's makeup. That's Ron's personality. But there is a guy that was successful, pitched on a championship team, pitched 13 years of the big leagues. Not easy. Not easy. And nearly 15 to 20% of his starts were developmental starts in a lot of ways, or figuring things out. Well, I mean, does it surprise you what you've seen up the up and downs with McLain this year? And maybe he's starting to figure it out, because McLain looked pretty damn good today, I have to tell you. And when you have that, when you have what you've seen from Ewing and Bench, I don't know what they're going to do with the rest of the veterans in the lineup, but if you're going to say they're going to keep the group around, I mean, Bichette was more Bichette during the month of June with an OPS of almost 900, but a top five lineup of Ewing, Bench, Soto, assuming Lindor is not done, Bichette, and then maybe adding Alvarez to the mix, whether it be as a catcher or DH, depending on how you go, it's not a bad top six. Sure, not having Alonso at first base, maybe, you know, depending if Soto's a DH and what you do with the other corner spot to maybe find some pop. I think they need another bat in the lineup. Absolutely, that's something that, you know, you could discuss. But it's not chop liver. And then you have a bullpen that at least Stern seems to be figuring that thing out. They've got controllable bullpen pieces if they don't trade them. Going into next year with Brazenbaum and Weaver and Williams, not bad. Really, the question will be, what veteran starters can you add to the mix? That's why I think not trading Holmes, unless you get some kind of whirlwind of a deal, like a great deal. Like, everything has to really be a no-brainer for the Mets to trade these guys. It really, to me, and if you don't think you could extend, and I'm sure they've already talked to Holmes, if they don't think they could extend Holmes, then, you know, by all means, trade him, because at this point he's going to opt out, and then you're going to be competing in free agency. Get something for him at this point. So this, to me, is not a bad situation. And the information you're getting from a Will Salmon, from a Jim Duquette, sounds like the direction this team is going to go. Now, let's also talk a little bit here about the difference between being interested in trading for somebody and listening. It would be patently foolish for any executive, for any team, not to listen to someone's offer. I don't care if it's Soto. I don't care if it's AJ Ewing, Bench, McLain. You got to listen. Hey, you want? Hey, I really like Nolan McLain. Sure, tell me what you're willing to offer. You don't know. You just don't know. I mean, does somebody go bananas and say, I really want this guy? Same thing with Bichette. So when you hear or you see reports, well, the Mets are listening on everybody, that doesn't mean they're tearing the damn thing down. It just simply means that they're trying to figure out, being that they're sellers, what's out there and what could they get to be better in 2027. I don't think there's any doubt in my mind. The conversation in 23 was aging pitching staff. DeGrom had just walked out the door. Billy Epler knew that he wasn't going to be able to compete with the pitching, or at least he thought, because the Mets wound up going to the NLCS the following year. He didn't think he'd compete with the staff the way it was, so they were definitely going to take a step back in 24, maybe reboot the payroll a little bit, and that was a lot because of Scherzer and Verlander. They put a lot of hope in aging Cy Youngs, squeezing the last vestiges of those Cy Young Award winners out of whatever juice was left. That's not Lindor and Soto. I'm sorry. Soto's top three in the league in OPS. I do not believe that Lindor, maybe he's not a top 10 WAR player, top 10 positional player anymore. Maybe he's outside of that. You know, maybe he's going to take a step back defensively for whatever reason, mental or physical. Maybe consistently, you know, there's little aches and pains. You don't play the demanding position of shortstop like he has to the tune of 155 to 160 games and don't have some long-term collateral damage on that. That doesn't mean he can't play 145 games effectively. Maybe he needs to play 130 to 135 games and the Mets need to find an appropriate replacement or DH him or whatever. Whatever they need to do. When you're not telling me that this is the same. This is not the positional player version of Scherzer or Verlander when it comes to Lindor. Now, does that mean that you don't listen if somebody comes to you? If the Yankees offer their top prospect, George Lombard Jr., yeah, good luck them doing that for Lindor. Lindor is willing to waive his no-trade clause, his 10-5 rights. Then, okay, you listen. But, I mean, guys, this player, I don't think you guys understand how good he really has been as a Met. Everybody focuses on this foolishness of the wife and the politics and the captain or no captain. And anytime something goes wrong, he seems to be the guy, similar to how A-Rod was when he was with the Yankees. I mean, it's not that he has the personality of an A-Rod, but something similar. He always takes accountability. You know, maybe the smile and his persona bothers you because he always seems to have the, you know, whether it's real or fake, whatever, the smile on. But this guy in the course of baseball history is one of the better shortstops that we've seen and is arguably, and I don't think it's even an argument, if you want to compare Reyes, and I'll grab the numbers in a minute, arguably, he's the best shortstop by far in Mets history. And you want to know how good? So as I'm talking here, I'm popping up Baseball Reference. Real quick, using wins above replacement, top five shortstop seasons in team history. Francisco Lindor 2024, Francisco Lindor 2023, Jose Reyes 2020, Jose Reyes 2006, Francisco Lindor 2025, Francisco Lindor 2022. Francisco Lindor, outside of his first season, 2021, which is just outside the top 10, by the way, has four of the top five shortstop seasons in team history, pushing Reyes in his 06, 07, 08 seasons back. Now, it's not a big gap. Reyes in his prime was pretty good. He had the stolen bases. He had a great cannon of an arm. I think defensively, he had some laps. You didn't really have, like those advanced metrics back then, so it's hard to compare. I think Lindor is more about positioning, and he kind of knows, because his arm's not great, he knows how to get it over there just enough. Reyes was a cannon of an arm. I think range-wise, they're both pretty much, I think Lindor's a little bit better. But, I mean, this is the best shortstop. When you add the combination of power, I know that maybe speed isn't the same thing because of Reyes' elite speed, but Lindor could still steal 25, 30 bags. He's a 30-30 guy. He was that in 2023. He was a 30-30 guy. When you really start to look at all that, this is an elite player. And people are talking about him like, all right, I can't watch him anymore because we're mad at the team for failing. We're mad at him for having a bad year, whatever. I mean, before Reyes, before Lindor, Jose Reyes came on board in 2003 and he blew away the competition. The best shortstop I ever saw, and he was one side of the ball, was Rey Ordóñez. And I think Rey Ordóñez is better than both of these guys. But I mean, you had guys like Bud Harrelson, steady shortstop, late 60s, early 70s shortstop. Rey Ordóñez, and maybe Kevin Elster in the late 80s, steady shortstop, pretty much made the plays, great at turning double plays, a little bit of pop in the bat, but you know, not a great hitter. It's a litany of not much after that. I mean, do you realize if this guy walks out the door, he's done. The next downgrade is nobody. You're looking at a Luis Guillorme type. You're looking at a glove-only, Zach Short type. I mean, you want to say Ronnie Mauricio could learn the position? Okay, is he going to hit? I mean, maybe defensively, he's got great hands. Defensively, maybe he can give you something. But to just run this guy out of town or even think about eating a contract to gift him to the Yankees or whoever, the Red Sox, whoever, I mean, you're out of your mind. And that's not what this team is going to do. I'm sorry. And I think today, specifically this weekend, you were given a reminder about why it's not out of the question that this team could compete in 2027 and why you should put all the pause and all the brakes on thinking about Lindor being traded. Unless it's a sweetheart of a deal. Look, we're going to get to learn a little bit. We're not in the getting to know you phase, and we're not in the go get it done phase, and we're not necessarily, I mean, there's no conversation about what this team needs. Because there's a, you know, the team needs more bats, particularly corner, first baseman, corner outfielder, maybe. So they're going to be looking at that. Definitely need veteran pitching, especially pitching that's controllable past, this year. We know that. Are they going to address it at the deadline? Who knows? They may, this could be more of an off-season conversation. But I do know with extended spring training, which we are in, and maybe extended garbage time, which we may be in September, that we're going to learn a lot. We're going to learn about these kid pitchers, the three, that we've already seen two of the three. And what a great test to be in Philly and then Milwaukee and see, especially for Thornton. Let's see what he's got on the road. I'm really looking forward to Thornton's start. And probably, for those who are premium members, I'll probably have some sort of conversation the morning after about that start, because I'm really looking forward to it. And, we're going to be learning about that. I think it's going to be interesting to see if Bo Bichette could settle in and be a third baseman and maybe be a solution, even if it's for a couple of years. And I think on the peripheral here, Beatty and Alvarez are playing for their Mets lives here. I think Alvarez is a little more entrenched. I think there is something to be said about him possibly being more of a DH. I don't think that's going to happen. I think, as a catcher, and maybe he has a lot of value on the trade market, but I'd be careful about just gifting him away. You have to get a sweetheart of a deal there. You look at that and you start to say, maybe Alvarez is a sixth or seventh hitter down in the lineup, and a longer lineup doesn't bother you as much. There's nothing wrong with that. A guy who could pop the occasional home run, as long as his defense isn't atrocious, because Luis Torrens is elite behind the plate. And I like the catch and throw and how that manages the game a lot. But he's, as bad as in this lineup where you have a glove guy at second and you might be a little bit light in the corner, particularly first base, and then you want to put a glove guy behind a plate, that's three soft spots in a lineup. I mean, if Torrens could just find a way to be the Torrens that he was in Seattle, or even to a certain degree when he first came over from the Yankees. I mean, the Torrens that have a league hit 15 home runs in 2021 and was a league average hitter. I mean, that to me is a starting catcher. That to me is, and his contract's a great value. If he could do that at the bottom of the order with his elite defense, that'd be great. So, all right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, David Mills is going to join me. We'll see what he has to say. I set you up here. You know what we're looking for. You saw a lot of it this weekend. That's the key. The kids, the kid pitchers are the key. And don't be so quick. And Lindor reminded you today, don't be so quick to write him off and just give him away like he's Max Scherzer or Justin Verlander in 2023. We'll be back with more right after this.